Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Saint Germain Radio Show with Brigitte Boyer and Mike Snyder on Spiritual Connections Radio.
Everybody, welcome to a special edition of the Saint Germain Radio Show. I am Brigitte Boyer, and I will be your host tonight, together with Mike Snyder and Mark Rawson. Both of them you already know, and both of them will come up in a minute. But I know that you probably wonder why on a Saint Germain Radio Show we have now an interview lined up. Saint Germain is still going to overlight the show, and I'm pretty sure that he had his hands in this interview setting it up, because the books that Garnet Schulhauser wrote are beautiful in their wisdom and in their purity and their love and hope that they spread. So I'm pretty sure that Saint Germain wanted the listeners to have this experience, and I'm very excited that we are going to have maybe one of many special editions to the Saint Germain Radio Show. So with me is Mike Snyder. You all know him probably from his music, where he channels the celestial realm through the music that he's playing on his piano. You can certainly find out more about him on his website, www.mikesnydercc.com. Hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
And then we also have back, after a long time, Mark Rawson. We are really excited to have him back. He was one of the original hosts for the Saint Germain Radio Show. And now he's back for this interview, and we are really, really happy to have him. Hey, Mark, are you there?
Testing. One.
Nice.
Hello.
So good to have your humor back. We missed that.
I heard we have a special guest on this evening. Who is it?
Yeah, and didn't you guys, you and Mike, already interviewed him in your men's show a few years back? So it's great that you were able to bring Garnet Schulhauser back online with us. But the introduction of our special guest and spiritual author, Garnet Schulhauser, I will give to Mike to give. So, Mike, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, Garnet's written 5 books. His latest book for 2021 is called Dancing with Angels in Heaven, Tidings of Hope from the Spirit Realm. And as Brigitte said, we had interviewed Garnet back in 2014 on one of our radio shows when we went over Dancing on a Stamp, his first book. But some more information about Garnet. He's a retired lawyer who lives near Victoria on Vancouver Island in Canada with his wife, Kathy. After practicing corporate law for over 30 years in Calgary with 2 blue chip law firms, he retired in 2008. And his first book, as I had mentioned, Dancing on a Stamp, was published in 2012. And the newest book we'll be talking about tonight, among other things, again, Dancing with Angels in Heaven. In this book, he recalls several trips to the spirit side. One of several trips in the book was to observe an orientation class about planet Earth for souls planning to incarnate on the planet. Garnet's website is www.garnetschulhauser.com, where you can look on there to purchase his books. And Garnet, I know we'll probably talk later. You have a second website just for your quantum touch session, so maybe we can get into that a little bit later. But without further ado, Garnet, great to have you on.
Garnet, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, why don't you start off with telling the listeners a little bit about your newest book or your books in general? I always feel you always mentioned that your guide had a little bit of an agenda. So why don't you tell us what the agenda of your books are, especially with your latest one, and what the main message is for our listeners?
Well, all my books are about my dialogue and then subsequent astral travels with my spirit guide, Albert. And yes, he did have an agenda. He came to me specifically for a purpose, and the purpose was that he actually manifested himself initially as a homeless man. I'll just backtrack a bit to tell you how I met him. I was still practicing law, and I was strolling down the street one Sunday afternoon when I was stopped in my tracks by a homeless man. And he looked like a typical homeless man, except I didn't go around him because he had these dazzling, sparkling blue eyes that seemed to be penetrating deep within the depths of my soul. I sensed that he knew everything about me, even though we'd never met before. But I didn't feel violated because at the same time he was sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and security and well-being. So it was an amazing experience. He then eventually broke the spell by saying, "Why are you here?" And he disappeared into a nearby store. I went into the store to find him, but he was nowhere to be seen. He wasn't on the street anywhere, so he had literally disappeared into thin air. Next day, I went back to the same street, same time, and I, hoping to spot him, and eventually spotted him sitting all alone on a bench. And so I went up to him and said, "Who are you, and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." So I sat down with him, and we began a dialogue. So he was actually manifested physically as a homeless man. I could touch him. I could see him. He actually told me that I was the only one who could see him. Anybody passing by the street that day would have seen me sitting on a bench by myself, talking to myself, because they couldn't see Albert. So that was the first few times. He didn't manifest physically. He just spoke to me by telepathy, and we had various conversations by telepathy, and then the next stage of it was that he came and took me on some out-of-body astral trips to the spirit side, various places in the universe, and his sole mission was really, and he told me this early on, was he said, "I'm not just here to satisfy your curiosity. I want you to write a book about what I tell you, what you see, what you hear, so that my revelations will be available to everyone." So his real purpose was to sort of help humanity, or at least to the extent those who read my books and didn't disagree with him. He was trying to get his message out, and I was his messenger, just one of his many messengers. He won't tell me who the other ones are, but he has a number of them all over the world. And my message, my mission was to write books, which was a bit scary at first because I've never even dreamed of writing a book. But he's very persuasive, so I eventually wrote the first book, and then second, third, fourth, and now I finished the fifth one, which is in a process of being published. So his main mission is to help humans understand their journey, because we're all, as you all know, we're all eternal souls, and we're all here having a human journey on Earth that we chose for ourselves. And he's here to try to help us understand why we're here, why we chose to come here, what we're supposed to be learning, and, of course, the big question is, what happens after our human bodies die? Do we disappear into nothingness, or do we have an afterlife? And the answer, of course, very conclusively is that, yeah, we're eternal souls. We continue on in the spirit realm after our physical bodies die. So he was here to help humanity, and he had a very set agenda. He never told me where he was taking me, where we're going until we were off on the trip. And he wanted me to meet a number of wise souls on the spirit side, of which I've met many of them. They all had a unique story and a bit of wisdom to pass on to us. He took me to other places in the universe so I could clearly understand that there are life forms on billions and billions of planets in our universe. Some of them are very advanced, way more advanced than humans. He wanted me to appreciate and pass on to humans the vast diversity of life in our universe. So it was. His main theme was understand the cycle of reincarnation, understand why you came here, understand where you're going after, and try to control your negative emotions so that if we all control our negative emotions like fear, anger, hate, and greed, then our planet here will be a much happier place to live in. And we have a long ways to go, but his view is we have to take one step at a time and try to get there, try to embrace love and compassion and discard negative emotions and raise our vibrations. And eventually, the goal for all humans is to raise their vibrations to a high enough degree that we can ascend up to the new Earth, which is our planet in a much higher vibrational dimension. So that's, in a nutshell, that's sort of the general overview of why Albert approached me and why I wrote my books.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. And I found reading your books that the message really is a message of love and empowerment. And that's so important right now, because this judgment of self can often really paralyze us to move forward and not even making us feel worthy of anything, especially with some of the religions making us feel that we are born in sin and that really there is no hope for us. And I found with your last book especially that you really, you know, you're even calling it Tidings of Hope, and it gives hope. And that's why your message is so important. It really gives the hope that there is so much more. And yet also what I found with your book, the warning to pay attention to Earth, to pay attention to Gaia, to pay attention to your fellow animals and the plant life. I thought that was really important too, because it's so easy to get lost in the day-to-day, and your book really, especially the last book now, really brought out to pay attention, to wake up, that every single one of us makes a difference with the choices that we make. So, yeah, very beautiful. Mike, Mark, anything you guys want to add right now?
Well, I did have one question I wanted to ask. So it's interesting, you know, Garnet, if you had looked back on your own life plan for this sojourn, would you say that having the career in law that you did for so many years, which requires a lot of brain work and research and I'm sure a lot of writing and organization. Now, do you think that was maybe necessary for you to become a successful author? Because besides recalling everything that went on in your journeys with Albert, you know, to be a writer, you have to be concise. You have to have some skill. You have to have some patience. So what would you say to that as far as, like, was the law the stepping stone to this part of your life, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've talked to Albert about that. Albert has not given me the details of my life plan. You know, he just says it's like you have to struggle like everyone else to with your journey on Earth without knowing the step-by-step details of your life plan. But he did say that the law was sort of a stepping stone. Absolutely. The law was to give me a practice in discipline. And lawyers have to, especially in my practice, have to do a lot of documents, agreements, prospectuses, that kind of thing. So that really honed my writing skills. It also gave me discipline to be persistent. Like, you have to really keep the nose to the grindstone when you're practicing law to get through the projects and keep on going. And that sort of spilled over into being an author, is because I did have those writing skills. I was very disciplined. You know, and it's the real key to writing is that you have to be disciplined. You have to, you know, I try to make, when I'm writing my manuscripts, try to write, spend some 2 hours a day at least, you know, for not every day, but 5 days of the week, you know, writing. And it's just so easy to get distracted and say, I'm going to go do something else. But you have to sort of keep focused on the writing to get the manuscript written. So those skills were established when I was practicing law, and then I just had to hone them and fine tune them when I started writing my book. So, yeah, it was clearly a stepping stone.
Yeah, and it's neat because I think that you can become a great inspiration for many people out there who, you know, like your career came from the opposite side of the world, from spirituality, so to speak. So you can be a real beacon of light for other people out there, especially in these times of COVID where people are reassessing their lives, they're changing careers, there's just so much change happening. You know, I think you can really be a beacon of light for people to say, hey, you know, I've written a book I never expected to, and this is, you know, how I did it. And so I think that's just wonderful, because, you know, there's some writers out there that set off with the goal to write, and there's some that never thought they ever would, and they had inspiration, divine inspiration specifically, like you did.
Yeah, well, and I was certainly getting, not sort of directly, like Albert wasn't dictating what I was writing in my manuscripts, but he would give me some hints here and there, And I know that I was receiving other divine inspiration. In fact, in one of my trips to the spirit side, I met up with Edgar Allan Poe, who, of course, wrote the mystery, the Sherlock Holmes books. And he apparently said that he has been helping me as a writing coach, even though I wasn't aware of it. And so I think most writers, whether they admit it or not, or realize it or not, they do get some divine inspiration. And for the most part, like, I mean, I could sit down and at the keyboard and a brilliant thought comes to my mind about what I should put in the book. And I think that it's my brilliant thought, but basically most of the time it's coming from the spirit realm, from my guides. So, you know, most people who are writing books, they do get divine inspiration. Some use it very effectively, some ignore it, but that's just the way it is with a human life on Earth.
Yeah, and no, I find that fascinating too, because myself and Brigitte, and I'm sure many other people too, have experienced automatic writing, and sometimes that can come through as I've had it where I've had a message for a close family member of somebody that's passed over. I've had it for messages for myself, and it'll come in brief spurts where you write it faster than you could think it. So that must be neat if you get some of that in a book. And then, you know, I noticed in the book where you're just talking about your own opinions and your own experience, you know, there's probably some parts where it's like, hey, spirit's coming through me and really, you know, moving the train along here. And then you have other parts where you're just saying from your own human experience, this is what I experienced, you know.
Exactly. Let me just correct something. I misspoke. It wasn't Edgar Allan Poe. It was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books. So I misspoke. But that was one of the guys who said he was my writing coach. But anyway, yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that everyone who writes a book is getting inspiration from their guides or from somewhere on the spirit world without really realizing it. And that's all very good, because I think that, and in fact, most of the times when humans have a flash of intuition, you know, a brilliant thought comes to your mind about not necessarily writing books, but about other things, that's for the most part, that's coming from the spirit world. It's coming from one of your guides, and they are sending you messages, particularly when you're stuck on something or you have to make a major decision. You have a very major decision point. Should I take road A or road B? And your guides are in there trying to pump you with information to take the path that they knew you had wanted to take when you planned your life and developed your life plan. So inspiration is great, and it's I wished I had more. I really wished I've often asked Albert, you know, can you help me every day and tell me what I should do every day? And he said, well, no, I'm not going to do that. That would make things too easy. You have to struggle with those day-to-day decisions like everyone else. He said, I'm just here to give you a general message for humanity so that you can write your books, but that's it. And he wouldn't budge from that. And I know that he's right about that, because it wouldn't be much of a challenge for any human if you had a step-by-step, day-by-day guide from the spirit world as to what you should do. There'd be no tough decisions to make. There'd be no challenges. You probably wouldn't learn anything. So I think it's all designed very perfectly for a life on Earth.
Yeah, it's all about free will, too, that we have the free will to make our own mistakes and choices, absolutely. Mark, do you have anything to ask?
You know, it's funny, because I was just kind of thinking about some of the other books, the earlier books that I read, and I'm going to kind of put this question out there based on what I think was something that was in place always anyway. It's for you as a gift. And that is, I know the initial meetings with Albert were him appearing to you as the homeless person. I think in one of your earlier books you had mentioned that at certain points you were able to communicate both ways with Albert without him even being there. Does that sound right?
Yeah, after he the first three times I met him, he manifested physically. After that, I didn't see him. He just communicated by telepathy. So he was a voice in my head. And we communicated by telepathy. And when I asked him later, I said, why did you appear as the homeless man, you know, in the first instance? And he said, well, if I just suddenly started talking to you as a voice in your head out of the blue, you probably would have thought you're losing your mind. So I had to sort of ease you into it. And easing into it was that I could then relate the voice I heard by telepathy to the homeless man I had met on the street. So it was a way of easing me into the conversation.
Mm-hmm. So I know through the series of writing your books and everything, Albert would come to you and you would go on journeys with him. But, mm-hmm. you know, what was interesting, and it kind of, I think it kind of, I remember it quite a bit at the end of your book where you said, well, you know, he's working on another project right now, you know, helping out the support team that's heading down, and that he wouldn't be working with you for a little bit. It almost felt like it, not an end to a relationship, but it felt like that was going to be, like you weren't going to talk to him ever again. So what's your thoughts on that? And then I guess the follow-up question is are you freely communicating with him on a daily basis, even though he's working on something else?
I still communicate with him, not on a daily basis, but, you know, several times a week. Usually it'll be something that I have a question that I'll ask him. He is working on other things, but he's said that to me a few times, like I'm going to disappear for a while, and he does for a few months, and then he comes back. So I'm sort of used to that, but I know he's never totally gone because he's one of my guides, and everyone's guides are basically watching them 24/7, even though they may not be communicating directly with him. So I know that he's around. I have spoken to him since I've written the last book, and basically I'm just sort of waiting for his marching orders. If he tells me to write book 6, I will, and if he doesn't, then who knows? But you know, I'm sort of in his. I'm looking for his guidance, and he's usually pretty free about offering it, but he doesn't really tell me much ahead of time. He won't give me any warning. He won't, you know, all the astral trips, I would never know when he's coming. I mean, I would just sort of see him standing in my bedroom one night, and we go off on a trip, and then I'm back in my body the next morning, and then he might not show up for 3 or 4 days or a week, and then suddenly he appears, and he never tells me when, and that's sort of like part of the mystery, I guess. And so that's just the way he is. He's a bit of a, as you mentioned in your email, he's a bit of a rascal, but a very loving rascal.
Garnet, have you ever considered? Oh, sorry, Mark. It just makes me think. You know, have you ever considered maybe taking it a step further and making a movie out of your books? I mean, you have quite a bit of material to really create a movie out of this. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'd love it if a movie was made out of my books, but it's not my choice. So it has to be somebody who's in the industry who thinks, okay, here's potential for a movie. You know, if they approached me, I'd say, of course, I'll be happy to cooperate. That hasn't happened. Maybe it will someday, but you know, keep my fingers crossed. But it would be you know, hopefully it would come to pass someday. I've asked Albert about that, and he won't tell me. He won't say. He there's so many questions I asked him that he won't tell me. You know, he's very inscrutable at times. But anyway, to answer your question, I'd love it if someone approached me to say we'd like to do a movie. I mean, I'm not a movie producer, so I can't really do it myself. But if somebody wanted to approach me, I'd be very happy to cooperate.
So, Mark, you said you had something else?
Oh, yeah. So I was just thinking about it a second ago. But, I know what it was. You had quoted earlier on the show that, you know, that you were able to coordinate the voice of what you were hearing in your head with the visual appearances of your guide. And because of that, it gave you the ability to kind of say, okay, this is my guide and this is the corresponding sound I'm hearing in my head. I guess for other people who are wanting to develop a connection with their guides, who haven't gone through the same experience you have with visually seeing your guide, hearing it, and then being able to match that in your mind, what do you recommend for other people to synchronize that mind connection with the guides?
Yeah, I get to ask this question a lot. Albert basically says that this sort of direct one-on-one communication that he has with me is very rare, doesn't happen that often. For most people, you have to sort of try to discern the messages from your guides. You know, they're very subtle most of the time. They're, as I mentioned, flashes of intuition, whispers in your mind, gut feelings, coincidental events. They communicate in many different ways, but they're very subtle. And so people have to sort of try to pay attention to what the messages are coming in. The best way to sort of become more focused on what they're saying is through meditation. You know, sit quietly in a room and try to quiet your mind. And as you get better at the meditation, then these messages from your guides will come through more frequently, and they will be clearer, and you'll be able to understand what they're saying and how you should react to them. The trouble most people have is that we're all very busy. We have day-to-day stuff to do. We have thousands of thoughts swirling through our heads every day, and mixed in that are messages and thoughts from our guides, and it's hard sometimes to distinguish, you know, what's just a random thought and what is the message from your guide. So through very practiced meditation is what Albert always tells me to tell people, meditate, and then your messages will become clearer to you and you'll be able to act on them. So unfortunately, there's no magic bullet to give to people to say, here, do this, and your guide will come through like you're talking on a telephone. It's not that easy.
Thank you for that. Brigida, what were you going to say?
In connection to that, what about negative emotions? I'm sure you must have asked Albert too, in what are good ways to neutralize negative emotions? I mean, we are living in a very compacted world where we are picking up a lot of everybody's emotions and thoughts. And on a good day, I can transform it into love and light, and I'm not reacting to it. But on a bad day, I sometimes feel like I become a mirror to the one who's sending me the negativity. Any advice that you can give that you received from Albert, any wisdom that you can offer to our listeners about how to deal with negative emotions?
Well, the first step is to realize that you have negative emotions. Everyone has them, you know, fear, anger, greed, hate, all the stuff that causes the problems in our world. Recognize, first of all, that everyone has them, and understand that when a negative emotion tries to flare up, you have to try to quell it by saying to yourself, this is bad, it's harmful, it's a negative waste of energy, and that you have to sort of try to stifle it. And a lot of times your negative emotions are directed towards someone else, somebody, you know, a neighbor or somebody on TV or a political leader or whoever. And you have to understand that those people are souls just like you, and they're having a human journey on Earth, and that they're also trying to control their negative emotions to some degree. And for some people, their negative emotions just get out of control. So if you understand that everyone's struggling on their journey with their negative emotions, that just makes it easier for everyone to sort of try to control their own. And it does happen, because before I met Albert, I let my anger, flare up quite frequently. You know, somebody had cut me off in traffic, and I was ready to flip them the bird. Now I sort of, when they do that, I sort of like, yeah, okay, that person's on his or her own journey, and they shouldn't have done that, but it doesn't solve any problem by getting angry at them or hating them for doing it. And so you have to just be conscious of the fact that we all have these negative emotions, and the best thing to do is just to sort of think about something positive, think about love, and think, okay, that person who just cut me off in traffic, I'm not going to get angry, I'm going to send him some love, because I know that he's a soul just like me, and we're all having our own journeys. And so that's, it's not easy. I mean, it's really hard to control your negative emotions, but you have to sort of try one step at a time and try to get understand that you're having them, the other people are having them. But at the end of the day, there's no reason to hate somebody else because they've done something wrong, stepped on your toes, or in some cases, there's no reason to hate people because they have a different color of skin, speak a different language, worship a different God. They're all just having their own journeys, and they're struggling with life just as you are, and so there's no reason to hate them. Try to send them your love, and it doesn't happen overnight, but over time you can gradually sort of try to stifle your own emotions, your negative emotions, and embrace love and compassion. And when you do that, it's just going to be happier for you, happier for them, happier for the whole world.
It sounds like Canadian traffic's just like it is in the U.S., and I guess Albert wasn't advising me last Tuesday driving to work. But I did have a quick question. So one question I have for you in regards to doing the journeys with Albert, you know, I, as you said, you know, you never know when he's going to show up, and it must be, you know, kind of interesting with that. But when you actually do the journeys and come back, have you noticed that it takes a lot of energy out of you? Do you have to make any kind of changes in your diet since you've been working with Albert? Anything physical changes?
No, and in fact, when I wake up in the morning in my bed after an astral trip with Albert, I actually feel very relaxed, refreshed, energized even, and I'm usually quite eager to jump out of bed, you know, grab my coffee and go to the keyboard, and I really try to sort of jot down the notes of what I saw, what I heard, who I spoke to, as quickly as I can, just rough notes, and eventually later they become the basis for my manuscripts. I haven't really changed anything. I'm more aware of the fact that we should, and Albert has preached this and so has Gaia, that we need to be kind and respectful to all the animals on our planet. And this is something that's really changed me, because before I can remember as a kid, you know, shooting songbirds or, you know, gophers or whatever without any thought about them. And now I look at animals much differently. And so as part of that, I know, and Albert's been encouraging me to try to cut back on eating animal flesh, and I'm doing better at it. I'm not totally a vegetarian yet, but that's really the only major change is that I'm trying to really be more respectful to animals on our planet and to Mother Earth herself. I really think that humans are doing a really awful job of polluting our dear Mother Earth, and it's causing climate change, as we're all aware of, and Gaia really wants us to curtail our pollution activities so that we can all live in harmony. She wants us to live in harmony with our other creatures on our planet and with her, and that's something that we can do. We just have to put our minds to it.
Yeah, it really touched me when I read in your book about Gaia telling us how she speaks to us. I have a dog myself. I walk her daily twice. And now since I read your book, I'm really listening, you know, to the winds and the birds. I just listen in a different way. And even though I might hear cars in the background, I really feel like she wants to reach out to us. She wants us to pay attention. So that really touched me. And also what you said, I think it was a lot also in your second book, Dancing Forever with Spirit, where you talked about the animals. And I just went to a pet store today, and there were animals in cages. And I looked at this one parrot, and the parrot stopped and looked back at me, and there was this connection and the sadness that I felt. And it reminded me of what you wrote in the book, too, in the last book as well, about, you know, how we humans just don't treat a lot of our animals well, that we really just try to control them and do whatever we want with them. And it really made me sad. So, yeah, the books that you write or wrote are such a great message to all of us to really pay attention and to make different choices about how we treat all our animals. You have a dog too, don't you, Abby?
She passed away a couple of years ago, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we were really close to Abby. She was just a great little dog. And I can remember when I first was speaking with Albert about, you know, animals, and I asked him the question. I said, do animals have souls? And he said, you need only look into the eyes of your little dog to get your answer. And that was his way of saying, yeah, of course they have souls. And their souls, you know, they're having a... that's the soul of a dog is having a dog journey as opposed to a human journey. And many of us may have had journeys in animals on Earth, other places, maybe not. But in any event, we have to respect them because they're having their own journey in an animal as opposed to a human, and that which means that we shouldn't love them any less or respect them any less than humans. They're having their own journey. They have their own rightful place in the universe and on our planet. And we should understand that and respect it.
Well, when you bring in a dog from the rain that's all wet, and they come in the house next to you and shake all that water off and spray you, another term for little rascals.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they definitely have their mischievous side too. And, you know, it's interesting in how, you know, I think one of the excerpts in the book was about some souls, you know, retain their personality. Some of them might be a little quiet. You know, some of them might go around playing pranks on people and opening doors when people can't see them. And I'm like, you know, that sounds like some of the pets I've had. You know, if I ever felt something haunted in my house, it's probably the spirit of my cat who was just like very mischievous, you know.
A lot of people experience that. In fact, in my case with little Abby, not long after she passed away, I was just sitting quietly in the family room reading a book, and all of a sudden I heard the pitter-patter of her feet on the hallway. And, of course, she wasn't there, but she was. That was her way of saying, you know, hi, I'm fine, I'm on the spirit side, and don't worry about me, you know. So animals often will try to communicate with their masters after the fact, just to let people know that, yeah, we're fine. You know, our bodies died, but our souls are back on the spirit side, and just to, in case you're grieving over our passing, you shouldn't, because we will meet up again. And in fact, what Albert said in my first experience, a trip to the spirit side, Albert said, I'm going to give you a little preview of what your welcoming party will look like. And everyone, when they pass from their physical bodies and go to the spirit side, there's a welcoming party for them. It's usually their deceased loved ones who've already passed on, you know, mother, fathers, aunts, uncles, grandparents, whatever. But what he showed me was that this is when my second dog, Abby, was still alive, was our first schnauzer, Oscar. He was there in a welcoming party. And he says that's quite common, that when people pass over, one or more of their beloved pets who've passed on will be there to greet them. And I thought, that's very comforting, that's very warming, and hopefully a lot of people will take heart about that. It's not just your human relatives that will meet you, but some of your pets will be there as well.
You know, and what I'd like to ask is, you know, that's got to be so comforting. So was that an experience just like all of your astral experiences where you have like a very vivid memory of it? Because, like, you know, if we wake up from a dream, if we don't sit down and write down the dream right away, you have like that 5 minutes you open your eyes, it kind of sometimes goes out of your mind, you can't remember it. But what yours are like, your astral travelers would probably be similar to when somebody has a near-death experience, because people that have NDEs, they come back and they said, this might have happened 25 years ago, but I can remember it clear as day what it was like on that other side. Would you say that your experiences are like that you have a very vivid memory for years of it, for years to come?
Yeah, yes, a very vivid memory, which allowed me, of course, to have the time to write notes about what I saw and write my manuscripts. Some of the details are fading a bit after, you know, a number of years, but the main theme is still there, very vivid. So I've never had an NDE. I've read about a lot of people having NDEs, but I think it's probably similar. And when I asked, one time I asked Albert about it, I said, is this like an NDE? And he said, yeah, but we're not going to make you die first. We're going to get you out of that step.
That's reassuring. Mark, you have any questions to add or anything?
Yeah, I always got all kinds of stuff. So through this last book, you went on a lot of journeys with your guide, and I think we can all agree that each of those experiences that you shared was amazing. But I want to know from you, which one of those was your favorite from the last book you wrote?
I think my favorite was when Albert took me to a parallel universe where Earth exists. Okay, it was a parallel universe that was sort of on the same time frame as us, except that they also had the COVID pandemic. Theirs occurred a little bit sooner, but he took me there, and it was in Los Angeles, and one of the amazing things that I describe in the book is that there were virtually no vehicles driving on the streets. So there was not much fossil fuel burning, and so I said, well, you know, okay, how did this arise? And he said, well, when they had the COVID pandemic, like our pandemic, a lot of things were shut down. So a lot of things were just shut down, and that the people there noticed that during the shutdowns, there was a lot less pollution on their planet, and they all thought that was a good thing because they really appreciated the fact that during the shutdowns there was less smog over L.A. And, you know, like in our planet, people were commenting that they could see the pyramids from Cairo for the first time in years, and because there's less pollution. So the people in that planet really resolved to try to get weaned off of fossil fuel burning because of the pollution it caused. And so they put their minds to it. And the scientists that the particle accelerator CERN in Switzerland, they eventually developed basically a teleportation machine. They started off by teleporting a molecule of water. And then from there, they went up to other things. And so in this parallel universe, people moved about by teleportation, just like Star Trek. And so you didn't need to drive a car. If you wanted to go from L.A. to New York, you'd get into a teleportation booth, push in the coordinates, and you'd end up in another booth in New York. So they did that for people traveling, for freight. So there was no trains running, basically, no trucks on the road. Airplanes weren't needed because you could just use this teleportation. And so to me, that was a real eye-opener. It's like, okay, if that universe, that Earth and that universe can do that, then why can't we? And we need to put our scientists to work to get that done so that we can decrease pollution and in a much happier existence. I mean, wouldn't everyone like to get from L.A. to New York in like a second as opposed to a five-hour flight? I mean, it was really quite amazing.
Yeah, that would be great, yeah. I like that whole story. I like it, you know, when you're looking at it from the aspect of they had moved beyond so many challenges, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was really an eye-opener. And you know, just to back up a bit, I mean, people could maybe were wondering, now, what is a parallel universe? Well, there's lots of parallel universes in the universe. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. And it all started when the source created the first Big Bang, and this universe was devised in a way that it would split in two periodically. So the first of all, there was one universe, and then it split into two, just like a human cell mitosis, where a cell will split into two identical. So the universes, when they initially split, they're identical, but then over time, with the interaction of random interaction of mass and energy, life forms and so on, then they develop slightly different paths. And so there's a whole bunch of different parallel universes, which means that, which is the other interesting thing that was an eye-opener for me, is that there may well be more than one of me in the universe. There may be me in a number of different parallel universes, different clones, and the same for you guys. I mean, so we may be able to, once our physical bodies die, we may be able to observe and see what happened to our clones in the other universes, you know. And it's always very interesting to me when I think every time I came to a major decision point, should I take the left fork or the right fork in the road, and I take one of them, I always think, what would have happened if I had taken the other fork, you know, and there's a chance that one of our clones may in fact have done that. And so it's very fascinating, and at times there are people who can actually take a glimpse into another parallel universe. It happens from time to time. The most famous case is what somebody called the Mandela effect, where a paranormal researcher was doing a teaching at a conference in South Africa, and she did a survey and found out that a significant number of the people at that conference swore up and down that they had saw media reports, newspapers, stories about Nelson Mandela dying in prison in the 1980s, when in fact we know in our reality he was released from prison and went on to become president of that country. And these people, what Albert says, these people really had a glimpse temporarily into a parallel universe where that, in fact, happened. So it's all very fascinating. It would be nice if we could all sort of just, you know, dial a parallel universe on our TVs and see what's going on. But it's not that easy. So it's all very fascinating, though.
May I ask if you actually asked Albert if our version of the Earth is like the worst out of all of the parallel universes one or not?
I didn't ask him that, you know, and I don't know whether he'd tell me or not, but, you know, I expect that there probably, it's like anything else. I expect there are some parallel universes that have Earth that's in worse shape than ours, but a lot of them are better, you know, and it's just sort of it's the random interaction of life forms and energy and mass. And that's how these things develop. So, you know, I don't know the answer to that. He hasn't taken me to any. He took me to one other parallel universe that was in my fourth book, I believe, where there were no Islamic jihadists because Muhammad had died at an early age in an accident, and so Islam was never founded by him, which meant that Albert took me to the lower Manhattan and World Trade Towers were still standing. They hadn't been taken out by planes. And the other interesting thing about that Earth was that slavery was abolished in England in the early 1500s, and the rest of Europe followed suit. So there was never any slave trade from Africa to the New World, which meant that there was no no slaves, there was no civil war, there was no big problem with civil rights. So it was all very interesting where two significant or seemingly insignificant quirks in their history resulted in a fairly significant change. Now, that world wasn't perfect. They still had World War I and World War II and lots of other conflicts, but they did not have Islamic jihadists, and they didn't have any civil rights problems in America. So those are sort of two that were in some ways more positive than ours. You know, I'm thankful, I guess, in a way that Albert doesn't take me to a worse-off Earth, because it would be a bit depressing probably, but in any event, maybe he will one day. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I had a question in regards to the new Earth. You know, I like the one example you gave in your book about the young woman who instantaneously lost her husband and two children in a car accident, and then she was left with, you know, massive grief, and how she had trained in an ashram in India and had gotten to such a high vibration that she could ascend into the new Earth. So I understand the concept of the new Earth, of like what you were saying, where, you know, there they don't have all the societal problems that we do here. And, you know, they, like you said, you didn't even see vehicles and everything, because it was just a much cleaner living environment. But when they say humans ascend to the new Earth, does that always mean that when you're in this physical incarnation, you could actually get to a certain vibration to be taken there without having, you know, a physical death? Or is it also optional that on the spirit side, you could choose and say, I'd like to incarnate into the new Earth to add that to some of my, life experiences, so that next time I would reincarnate on the old Earth, I kind of know what like utopia is like.
Yes to both. Excuse me. You can, souls in the spirit side can choose to incarnate into a human or an animal in the new Earth if they choose. That doesn't happen too often. Well, it does happen, but not as often, because there are a whole lot less challenges and lessons to be learned there, because it's a very, you know, peaceful and relaxed kind of place. But they can do it. But the humans on this Earth can actually physically ascend. Their physical bodies can actually ascend up to the new Earth without their bodies dying. And it's really a question of once the vibrations of your human body here match the higher vibrations of the new Earth, you just descend up. It's sort of like if you hold a cork underwater and let it go, it just pops up to the surface, and that's how your body would sort of rise up to the new Earth. So, that it happens both ways. A lot of people have made the ascension to the new Earth, but there's still a whole lot of us here on the old Earth, including me. I wished I could do that, but I think... who knows what's in store for me, but it is possible. You can do it. You just have to work very hard at it, and you have to really fully embrace love and compassion totally, and totally stifle your negative emotions, and that's the way to do it. It's easy to say, but not so easy to do.
And I find that interesting, because I know another part in the book said that in rare cases you could have an entire group of people ascend to the new Earth at once. And I wonder if that almost could explain like mysterious disappearances, you know, like an disappearance over the Bermuda Triangle. You have a whole airplane or a whole boat that goes missing. They never find a trace of it. You know, I just wonder if there could be some rare case where maybe that group was meant to ascend to the new Earth. They just happened to all be in the right place at the right time and on the right vibration.
Yeah, no, it's totally possible for groups to go up together. Excuse me. And in fact, when I first went to the New Earth, I met with the descendants of people who had lived in Central America on our old Earth, very peaceful sort of group of people. And then when they found that there was a barbaric army encroaching on their territory, and this army, of course, had weapons and everything else, and all they wanted to do was destroy everything in their path. So these people sort of really contacted, got connected to spirit, and the whole village basically ascended up at the same time. So it does happen. So people on a plane could do it. You never know when a plane disappears, you know, where has it gone? It could have, ascended up to the new Earth, or it could have disappeared into a wormhole into another universe, whatever. There's a number of explanations, but groups can in fact go up together. If you guys suddenly go off the air, I'll know what happened to you. You went up to the new Earth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and it reminds me of the author James Twyman, some of his books. One of his first books, he had an experience in Croatia where they were in the middle of a civil war in a very high-frequency community that sounded like similar to the Council of Wise Ones. They had a council of 12 there of these beings that were they meditated 12 hours a day with. But anyhow, there was times when the war came into their village and they were able to lay down and basically reach such a high vibration that none of the people in the armies saw them. They were just completely protected, and then they would move somewhere else. The armies would move away and they'd be back to normal life. So, you know, it's just amazing the vibrational raising, just the secrets that there are within that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When you raise your vibrations, people with higher vibrational rates basically can't be seen. And in fact, it's happened to all of us. I mean, Albert has said that the people, you know, like compare the human race now to 500 years ago, we've all raised our vibrations to some degree. And he said that if we went back, we were able to transport ourselves back to the, you know, 500 years ago, the people there we'd be sort of semi-transparent to them because our vibration rate was much higher than theirs, okay? So, and when you get to the sort of the really raise your vibration rate up, of course, nobody here can see you, and you go to the new earth. And that's why people can't normally see spirits on the spirit side, because that spirit side is the very highest vibrational rate, and so that's why people here can't normally see them. Spirits can manifest themselves to appear to people if they choose to do so, but most of the time they don't. So in any event, your story sounds very much like these people had managed to raise their vibrations, which is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what we're all working on. That's getting rid of the negative emotions, raising our frequency so that we can no longer be affected by the negativity. Yeah, definitely. Mark, your turn.
Oh, yay. I've been hanging out here with my question. I'm like, don't let me forget my question. So this is a question I'd like to ask you about your own personal journey, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, you've done all these books, and you've had all these great experiences, and you've had a lot of time with your guide. It seems to me in the final book and where you're standing now is that that's all kind of come to an end. And I'm just wondering, because I've gone through my own challenges with something like this, I'm just wondering how you overcome with that shut off, no further experience, no full connection with spirit, you know, the excitement of the journey in that moment. How do you deal with that shut off?
Well, I was saddened by it. I mean, I really got to enjoy being, you know, being with Albert and taking the trips and so on. So I was a bit saddened by it. But then I realized that you know, I didn't take that as a final farewell. And in fact, since that, we've had some conversations, but haven't had any astral trips. But I knew that, you know, eventually I'd see Albert again and talk to him again. If not in this incarnation, I know that he'd be waiting to say hi to me when I crossed over to the spirit side. So it was a bit saddened at first, but after that I realized that, you know, this is just transitory. I'll see him again. I'll talk to him again. And so, you know, life goes on. And in the meantime, I have to sort of continue on with my day-to-day living and get through the rest of my incarnation without causing too much trouble.
Yeah, that sounds
beautiful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Garnet, do you want to... you're welcome. Garnet, do you want to tell everybody how they can contact you if they so choose, where to get your books, and just like give everybody your information?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best place to reach out to me is on my website, which is, I think, was it Mike or Mark mentioned before, garnetschulhauser.com. That's not easy to remember, but if anybody Googles any of my book titles like Dancing on a Stamp or Dancing with Angels in Heaven, they'll find my website there. You can find information about all of my books. You can dial into my social media sites like Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and get more information about what's going on in my life. There's convenient buy links on my website where you can just click on it like to Amazon, and you get right to the page where all my books are, so you just buy them from there. And I have a video tab on my website where I have posted the recordings of all of my radio shows, all of my speaker presentations, And so people can just dial into that if they've missed any radio show or want to go through the history of it, they're all there. So there's lots of information there. My email address is also there, which is contact@garnetschulhauser.com. And if anybody who's listening has a question or a comment, send me an email and I'll do my best to get back to you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Garnet. So we are coming to the end of the hour. I think we have like 5 minutes left. Is there any final message you would like to give our listeners? Anything in particular that you want to just send out into the ethers at this time?
Well, I always remember one of the things that Albert told me that at some point during our travels that I thought was very wise. He said, you know, don't take life so seriously. It seems like life here on Earth, which is not a walk in the park, can be very difficult at times. But you have to recognize that everything you encounter, whether it be good or bad, there's a lesson for you to be learned. And what you need to do is, especially when something bad happens, I mean, it's easy to take the triumphs in our journeys, and all the successes, that's easy to live with. It's the bad things. It's the disappointments, the tragedies that happen in our life. Those are the ones that are hardest to get to deal with. He says you have to understand that there's something to be learned from everything. And so when you get into a bad situation, what you have to recognize is that, you know, it's there to teach you something, and you have to learn from it and then move on. And he said, don't dwell on the past. Don't relive the bad things that happened to you, because that's a waste of energy. But learn from the mistakes that you've made and move on. And above all, he said, you know, you need to laugh a lot, smile with everyone you see, and understand that you're on a journey that where everyone's journey will end at a very happy place called the spirit side. So no matter what you do, you can't go wrong. You can't take a wrong turn. You're always going to end up back in the splendor of the spirit side. So lighten up, laugh a lot, and don't take things so seriously. And I always thought that was very good advice, because like me and probably like a lot of people, when something bad happens to me, I think, oh God, when is this going to end? And I didn't deserve this. Why is the universe doing this to me? And the answer is the universe isn't doing anything to me. It's all part of my pre-birth planning and how I take my free will actions on this planet. So why am I here? Why is this happening? Because I chose it to happen. So that was his great advice. And so now, you got to be careful, because if you sort of smile at everyone that you meet on the street, they're going to think you're crazy. But it's a good thing to do anyway.
Yes, truly. Well, it truly was a pleasure having you on the Saint Germain Radio Show. And we all finished your last book. I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful, beautiful message of hope and love, and also a wake-up call. I think that's continuously through your books, the message to wake up, to make new choices, make choices of love instead of choices of anger. And I think it's really, really time that we pay more attention to this. So thank you, Garnet. It was a pleasure having you. Thank you, Mark. Mike, anything you guys want to add? Yeah.
I just wanted to add, Garnet, if you ever got an opportunity to narrate one of your own audiobooks, some of your books I've done as audiobooks, and boy, I'd love to hear one in your voice if you ever had the opportunity.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. In fact, excuse me, when my publisher first started doing the audiobooks, well, the first one, they didn't ask me, but after that they said, do you want to narrate them? And I was just busy and I declined, because I thought that it would just take up too much time. But there's a chance for the last book, and maybe I'll think hard about that and then decide, well, maybe I should narrate my own book. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, wow.
That would be great. That actually would be fantastic. So we are going to finish this interview and the special radio show, the special edition of the Saint Germain Radio Show, with one of Mike's music pieces. So stay tuned, and we are going to play Rays of Light by Mike Snyder. Thank you, everybody.
Well, what a great show tonight. We really enjoyed interviewing Garnet. I think we'd like to ask him back again at some point if he'd be willing. And, you know, just really it was enjoyable to ask him questions after just freshly reading his new book. And, you know, Brigitte, you asked some pretty good questions too. And
yeah, I can only recommend reading this book or any of his books. They are certainly reaffirming a lot of the things that we already believe in, which is great. And I also felt just overall good feeling reading them. So I definitely felt like a frequency was coming through, an empowerment, a recharging, an enlightenment. So it was a very beautiful experience. And it was also great to have Mark Rawson back. You know, he used to be part of the Think Germain radio show, and he just jumped in one more time to interview Garnet Schulhauser. So that was a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's neat to see, you know, from the time I read Garnet's first book to the one he has now, just how he's expanded and how his adventures have expanded. And we were just talking, you know, we both understand the letdown he must feel after some of those journeys are over and he doesn't hear from Albert for a couple months. You know, we sometimes do a weekend long retreat where we have several, you know, 8 or 12 participants, and you just reach such a high level, like a real feeling of community with everybody at the end. And then it's like, boom, it's all over. It's Monday morning, back to work.
Yeah.
You know?
That's an awful feeling.
You know, it's just the name of the game. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a duality of, you know, when to put the spiritual hat on and when to put the work hat on and, you know, try to make it all mold together.
And having the human experience and doing our best to not get caught in the negative emotions, right? That is the challenge of the day. So we will connect with all of you again for the 11:11 Stargate or Star Portal. So stay tuned to Facebook, email, newsletter, whatever works for you. And at that point, it will be Saint Germain coming through. So it will be a channeled event again. And looking forward to connecting with all of you then. Love you all and hope you have a great evening and hope you enjoyed the radio show. Peace out, everybody.
Good night.